Okay, you might want to get close to your radio.
My deal is we can have an honest conversation where both sides have some issues.
I love it.
I want to officially welcome you to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Today on News One Now, nearly 400 people have been killed by cops in 2015. What is going on? We'll talk about this Washington Post story with our panel. Today on Fit Live Win, we're talking tackling childhood obesity. Also, Pierre Garçon. He is, of course, wide receiver for the Washington Redskins, but now he is focused on life after football by owning a pizza franchise. We'll talk entrepreneurship with Pierre. And the great saxophonist Kirk Whalum talks about his new album, The Gospel According to Jazz, Chapter 4. Plus, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, his big weekend blockbuster, San Andreas, rakes in over $50 million. Time to bring the funk on News 1 Now on TV 1. Folks, we've been focused on this show for the last several months dealing with what we consider to be overzealous cops actually shooting and killing Americans in a significant way. Well, the Washington Post had a big piece over the weekend that detailed nearly 400 people have been killed by cops nationwide in 2015. That's twice as many people over the last decade, and many say that is a very low estimate. The Post has begun compiling a database of fatal police shootings. They found that while half of the victims were minorities, 66% of unarmed victims were African American and Hispanic. They also found that majority of the victims were poor, had committed small crimes in the past, and had mental issues. And so what must be done to rein in cops and to get them to understand that deadly force is not always the only thing to do? On the panel, Monique Presley, attorney at the Presley firm, Paris Denard, communication strategist, and Stephanie Brown James, CEO of Vested Strategies. Folks, last year, Congressman Bobby Scott's bill was passed by the Senate, signed into law by President Barack Obama, that requires police now to report when someone dies in police custody or when it comes to these shootings. For the longest, we had no idea, and you still have loopholes in it. This is vital to understand what is happening with the cops, and what the Post has done, I really think, breaks down this whole issue when you see the fact that cops do not know how to deal with people with mental issues. The fact that you're dealing with people who are unarmed. And so what role do you think this report is going to play in changing what happens in terms of police departments across the country?
Well, the data is tremendously important because, as you can see by what the Post did over the weekend, once we actually have the raw numbers in front of us and you can know, one, that even at half of those being shot and killed being minorities, that still is more than the average should be for our ratio of people who are in the United States of America. And then for it to be such a high number unarmed, that means that when our white counterparts are encountering police officers, they at least have some reason to know that there is an armed person on the other side, but that police are jumping the gun literally on this, where this is concerned. The other thing that's important here, though, is what do we do with the numbers? Because there were numbers before this. Even though they weren't required to report it federally, every time there's an incident, data is created because paper is created. It's a question of whether the local municipalities and the states have to turn over those documents to the federal government so that the Justice Department can then be armed and come in and do something about it.
And I think it also gives the public credence to the suspicions that many, especially in the black community, have had for a long time, that police are overzealous and that they are targeting low-income African-Americans, young people in our communities at a high rate, and that it is literally tearing our communities apart and destroying the trust that was ever between the police and the community. And so now what I hope is that individuals will go back and say, okay, we have this national report. Let me get the facts from my local community. Let me talk to my city officials. Let me talk to the police chief. And let's get some organizations going in our communities to focus on this issue for the long term, get the facts, get organized, and get a strategy to address this along with the police.
Paris, go ahead.
Yes, Stephanie, I think you're absolutely right. I think there needs to be a strategy that is applied to this because facts are important figures. And so a lot of times we can go around and through estimates out and people can speculate. And a lot of, for the longest time, it's just been a lot of people claiming these things to be true, claiming that this has been my experience. But now you have the numbers. The facts don't lie. And so these police departments, these city managers should take this information, bring it together, and put forth long-term strategies to really really put in place and in practice things to change the system.
We showed a video from last summer in Dallas that was quite disturbing, and that video showed a mother who called the cops because her son was simply unruly. Cops arrived, there's two cops, they had body cameras, and he's playing literally with a screwdriver. I mean, he has mental challenges, and he is fascinated with this screwdriver. Mm-hmm. And when literally door opens and the mom walks out, she said, look, I've been unable to control him. I mean, it's not the kid's not, he's not yelling, he's not screaming, but, and the cops say, sir, put the screwdriver down. And in a matter of seconds, he's gunned down.
Right.
He wasn't charging at them with a screwdriver. The Kojima Powell store, same thing in St. Louis, had a butter knife in his hand. Cops come on the scene. It's 16 seconds from the door opening by the police to him being shot and killed. At no point did the cops protect themselves by getting cover, literally, as they approached him. And Powell just, what? He just steps forward, a small step, shots fired. And I think so, clearly what you have here is you have mentally ill folks, and cops are unprepared to deal with this, and they're not taking the necessary steps, and folks are ending up dead.
It's not that they're unprepared, though, because they are trained for it, and for most police departments,
well, they're trained for it. Their training sucks.
And, well, no, they're not using the training. They also have special deployments of people who they could send out. So when you have times like both of those incidents where even in the call they were saying that there was mental illness, so if you're getting this person is bipolar, this person is schizophrenic, this person's not taking their medicine, whatever there is, then the first response from whoever's local in the area may not be the person who needs to handle the situation. They may be the ones that need to try to make the situation safe and wait the extra 30 seconds for the department to dispatch additional people to come there. You can use nets with people who are mentally ill and they have training about how to do that. You can use different devices in order to do things that wouldn't be lethal or deadly force. And I think that's the important point generally. Sometimes people look at the numbers and say, okay, there's all of these killings, but how many of them were unjustified? To me, the point is, even if it was a justified shoot, what happened that caused the situation to escalate the point that the shooting was necessary? And that's where the additional training has to come in. And as Stephanie said, it needs to start at the local level.
Well, Roland, I think it's very important that you are raising this issue of mental health, because not enough people in the media are talking about this issue and the numbers that show how many people that are minorities but are especially affected by police shootings with people that are mentally harmed. But the issue is training. Now, they may be trained, but in all things, there comes times for things to be retrained, and you can have their new policies, new procedures that can come up. And so it may be time for a new strategy, new things to be put in place so that these police officers can have better training based on more statistics, more numbers, and more learning that has been brought up through research.
And we need to make this a community-wide issue. You know, I think that so much falls on the police departments who are not responding in cases where there is a mentally ill individual. They're not responding the right way. They may or may not have the adequate training. But look, you have communities, you have cities who are continuing to cut mental health programs. Mm-hmm. They're continuing to cut funding to hospitals who actually service mentally ill individuals. And so these things go hand in hand. When you have a community that is not embracing this issue together, then you're going to continue to have incidents like we're seeing with police and the mentally
and
ill,
bottom
especially.
Line is, death is death.
Right.
Absolutely.
So,
and it's final.
I would much prefer cops take the necessary steps to not have to kill somebody, mm-hmm. than simply resorting to deadly force. And I think that's happening in all too many cases. Mm-hmm. Hold tight 1 second. When we come back, what is the cost? What is it costing us when it comes to these police shootings? There's a real cost, not just when it comes to the personal loss of lives, but also a financial cost when it comes to settlements by police departments. We'll discuss that next as well.
Wherever you are, we are. Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Folks, sad news. Bo Biden, the Vice President Joe Biden's son, died Saturday from brain cancer. Bo was a lawyer, member of the Delaware National Guard, and former Delaware State Attorney General. Biden's health complications go back to 2010 when he suffered a mild stroke at the age of 41. He planned on running for Delaware governor in 2016, even though he had been battling cancer since 2013. He had been receiving treatment at MD Anderson Cancer Hospital in Houston. He is survived by his wife, Hallie, and two kids, Hunter and Natalie, and we'll give you details on funeral arrangements when they are released. All right, folks, there was an interesting story that we saw that was detailed in the Huffington Post that talked about the real cost when it comes to police brutality and these various claims. Between 2004 and 2014 in Chicago, follow me here, folks, $521 million spent on various cases. In New York, 2006, 2011, $348 million. Los Angeles, between 2002, 2011, $101 million. Do understand, you're talking about nearly $1 billion of taxpayer money spent on various police brutality cases. The cost, though, is not just when it comes to the claims. We're also talking about still paying those cops their salary, still paying them, contributing to their pension, and paying lawyers' fees as well. And so the cost is even higher. One girl on our panel, this is a thing that for me, I sort of made this argument, Paris, to conservatives. One, I've said to conservatives who are pro-lifers, mm-hmm. How are you for life in the womb, but not outside the womb? That's first. But if somebody wants to make an argument as to why they're pro-life and they still believe in supporting police, that's fine. But a fiscal conservative should be angry that taxpayer dollars is being wasted having to pay for the actions of cops who are killing people, who are beating people and brutalizing people.
You're absolutely right. And once again, like, these facts and figures do not lie. These numbers are astronomical.
That's just three cities.
And that's just three cities. I mean, I looked up some information. Baltimore, over 10 million. You know, Dallas, over 6 million. Oakland, 70. Minneapolis, 21 million. Denver, 13 million. And this doesn't even include what we're paying on prisons. And that's a whole other conversation on the money that's going into funding these public prisons and even the private prison industry. And the issue that happens is it takes away from necessary funding to go towards things that we really need. People have been talking about infrastructure, mm-hmm. infrastructure and all the things that we, roads and bridges collapsing. You don't have the money for after school programs, and all the cuts that they're making could be traced directly back to this insane amount of money that's going towards these settlements and these fees that are going towards cops. And I think every Republican, every fiscal conservative that has a brain and a heart should say, you know what, this may be time for us to get on this issue and really address this systemic problem with this police forces, because it is costing us not only lives, you know, all lives matters, Black lives matter, but also the amount of money that is being wasted on this issue.
Well, and I think, you know, this is an issue that not only fiscally conservative folks should be concerned about, but if you fiscally broke, if you're a poor white person right now, you should be very upset. When you look at Baltimore, I mean, the rate and the number of poor African Americans, poor white people, it's not that far off. Now, we've seen with the Black Lives Movement, with the police misconduct movement that so much attention is being paid to, that there hasn't been a lot of really fury coming from poor whites who are also victimized in right. so many ways. Now, this to me, when you get down to the money aspect and the resources that are not going into your communities because they're going in to sell these cases or they're going to pay for lawyer fees, this to me is the issue now that should get everybody on board right. to say, look, this has to come to an end because it's draining resources from our communities that badly need them.
I would think Grover Norquist, who is a
Perfect.
Big time
yeah.
Opponent of raising taxes, would be angry. I mean, I'm trying to figure out where are the people who are always screaming about government abuse, who are always complaining about government waste.
And all these laws.
This is a perfect example for them to say something yeah. because at the end of the day, this money, city councils are having to agree to these deals, mayors are having to sign off. I mean, the New York Central 5 rape case, it was a $40 million settlement that could have been averted had you had prosecutors who had ethics and integrity.
Right, but you're not going to see a $40 million settlement anyplace in Maryland. Why? Because they have caps. They have statutory maximums on what a person can recover. So if you're shot by a police officer, the most that you'll walk away with, even wrongful death, the most the family will get will be $500,000. So if you're a mayor in Baltimore, then you're going to someplace in Prince George's County, this just happened a month and a half ago, and testifying and fighting for the statutory limits, the caps to stay in place, because even though they may have had to come off of $5 million, 3.47 in the past 4 years, it could have been three times that, and it should have been three times that. So for me, I don't think the fiscal conservatives care because they're winning right now. Compared to what could be coming out of the budget, they're getting caps on the lawsuits, and I'm not just saying this because it's my livelihood, but it does count. What we need is for the minimums and the maximums to be off the table in these counties that are hideous, heinous offenders. So if you're in Baltimore and you're 21 years old and you get shot and you have your life in front of you, your family should be able to ask for $11.1 million and get it. Then that's a hit that the city will have to explain to taxpayers. That's a hit that they'll have to come up with money to find. And every other person who has a similar offense should have to do that. Because otherwise, you've got 50 to 100 people who were being shot over the course of 2 years, and the only thing they have to pay total is $1.1 million. The numbers seem big, but they're not what they should be, and that's why nobody is screaming
right
now.
And that's how you deter future police violence.
That's right.
When you now having pressure being put on the policymakers to say, wait a minute, your misactions are costing us a lot of money, and I think that that's one deterrent that we need to really, I mean, I think I totally agree with you on, we need to raise the cap.
But see, the community activists shouldn't be fighting and saying you're spending too much money. In places like New York, maybe, but in Baltimore, they should be saying, oh no, we want these families to get everything that they deserve.
Yeah.
And then when they fight for that and show the injustice that if you come to D.C. and you get shot across the line, then you get $2.1 million, but in Baltimore, you get $500,000, that's where the fight is, because then the activists are saying, our lives really do matter. They matter not just on the street, but they matter at the bank. So if you do something you're not supposed to do, then you're going to have to pay. Then I think maybe we'll see some change.
20 seconds.
Yeah, I think everybody who's concerned about this issue can really have a reflect on the 26th campaign. When you look at all these states and all these candidates, there's somebody from each state, each of these cities represented. You go to New York, Baltimore, South Carolina, Florida, Ohio, New Jersey. There's a candidate on the 2016 platform on both sides of the aisle that can really, you can have your voice be heard and say, you know what, this is an issue that needs to be on the national stage to affect it on a local level.
All right, folks, I truly appreciate it. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Coming up, Camp Fit TV founder Rob Howells and camper Joshua Baptist join us next on Fit Live Win to talk about fighting childhood obesity. Also, Pierre Garçon plays in the NFL, but he is focused on life after the NFL. We'll talk about entrepreneurship as he embarks on becoming a pizza owner. And also, Dwayne The Rock Johnson brought in big bucks for San Andreas, but he also has a big HBO show coming up as well. For more news and information, go to news1.com. Hit me up with your thoughts on Twitter at Roland S. Martin, or go to our News One Facebook page. 22 after the hour, News One Now on TV One.
Your centerpiece for black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
Over the last 30 years, obesity rates have tripled for African-American children. And sometimes children and parents need a little help getting kids to shed those extra pounds. Here is some advice for our Fit Live Win segment. It's certified trainer Rob Howells, founder of Camp Fit TV, a positive outlet for physical exercise to battle the bulge for our youth. He joins us with one of his camp success stories, Joshua Baptist. Folks, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. So we're talking about, obviously, a huge issue.
Yes.
All across the country. And there are numerous reasons why. I mean, you could talk about sugar. You could talk about in terms of fast food. But you can also deal with the reality that kids are less active today than in the past.
Mm-hmm. very less active, and there are also so many resources out there for them that they don't know about. We have video games, we have the internet, all that. So they spend all their time in front of the computer, and the parents are working late, and so the minivan becomes a dinner table. And so all those factors, we just try to be some kind of haven where we can kind of pour some nutrition into this, some exercise, and really, most importantly, like some ideas for parents how to maybe live healthier. Sometimes it's just a choice. A shift of a choice could change your whole perspective.
We also don't have recess in schools. I mean, bottom line is physical education has largely been taken out of most schools across the country.
Yeah. I wonder why. That's another topic, I think. There's another segment. So what can we do? You know, we figure it can't fit. We figure we can bring all the other organizations, nonprofits, trainers, nutritionists, dietitians, life coaches, bring them all together, have a program where children can come in, they can find their inner winner, we like to say, because it's in there. Sometimes there's a lot of garbage that, you know, kind of covers it up. And we help them find themselves, we get them in shape, and we make it exciting.
How? Like how?
Okay, so do you like eating grass? You like eating leaves?
No. That wouldn't be on my list.
Mm-mm. We throw it into a smoothie and make it taste a little good. Oh, wow, this is healthy? So we kind of trick them sometimes. We take them out exercising. Oh, and the magic is in the first 10 pounds. A lot of folks, they come onto the show, that you know, they're insecure. They don't want to walk down the halls. Their kids or their friends are teasing them. But they start losing a little bit of weight, and the light comes on. And so that all of a sudden gives them a different perspective. So introducing them to different athletes, we have entrepreneurs come in and they show them like different ways of living and opening the door for opportunity. And so with that environment, with the trainers and the coaches and the great activities, it kind of just makes it fun.
So Joshua, for you, when did you get involved in Camp Fit TV?
I got involved in Camp Fit TV around the transition from eighth grade to ninth grade, which is the transition from middle school to high school.
Right.
And when I first went to Camp Fit, I was shy because I didn't really like my size. I was big. All my shirts didn't really fit. So then I joined Camp Fit, and when I joined Camp Fit, I knew I was joining something serious because they cared about what's your personal goal, like. What do you want to do so you can lose your weight and get to the size you want?
I didn't know what Joshua's eye colors were for the first 3 weeks because he always looked down when he first came to the camp. And now this guy looks you right in his eyes. He has a scholarship to college. He's secure. And he's coming back this season to help be a mentor. We're also going to help get him in better shape, too, for college to open in freshman year. But he's going to come back as a mentor this year to kind of talk to the kids that are coming in for the first time of his success stories.
So how much weight did you lose?
I lost 10 to 15 pounds.
10 to 15 pounds. That's and right. So and over what period of time?
2 to 3 months.
No, you were there about 6 weeks.
6 weeks.
You came about 6 weeks.
And for you, it was important for you to deal with that. And so how has it caused you? Have you changed what you eat, when you eat, things along those lines?
Yes, sir.
What other lifestyle changes have you made?
Instead of eating junk food, when I go home, like you just sitting down like watching TV, you look at junk food, and then you have like vegetables. I'd rather choose the vegetables than the junk food, because what can't fit, they change your mindset of what to eat.
Have you also set a target for you in terms of how much overall you want to lose?
Yes.
What's that?
20 pounds.
All right then. And is that also critical in terms of getting kids to understand that they also can set goals for themselves?
Yes.
And to reach those goals?
Goals are huge. If you don't have a goal, you're not going anywhere. So it's almost like, you know, you feel lost because you don't know where you're going. So we just help them figure out, okay, where do you want to go? Just pick a point. What do you want to do? Write it down. Because they all have life journals. They come in, they have a life journal where they keep their, you know, their exercise, their eating regimen, but also their goals. So by having that goal as a tangible thing, they can open up and look at it. Okay, so now what are the steps we're going to take to get to that? And the closer you get to it, the better you feel, the more you want to keep doing it. It's a psychological thing. If you don't mind, it don't matter. That's how we do it.
So how can folks get in touch with you and Camp Fit TV?
Camp Fit TV was wonderful is that we actually have that as a website, campfit.tv. And you'll never forget it because Camp Fit's on TV. And so we'll be there forever. I got to tell you, in a nutshell, you know, we know that right now the life expectancy for kids is going backwards. The first time in history that actually our kids are projected to live shorter lives than us.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of factors in that. So we figure we pour into our children now. Right, we pour into them with the information, the knowledge, the opportunities, when we could change those statistics of high blood pressure and all the other percentages that
right.
plague us. So that's our goal. So Can't Fit TV, whether you want to have your child on the show, on the program, or whether you're a trainer, a life coach, or somebody who just cares, who's caring.
All right.
Caring helps.
Gentlemen, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, folks. All right. We come back. We'll chat with Pierre Garçon of the Washington Redskins about what it means to be an owner, not just focused on the football field. Also, my man Kirk Whalum. I talked to him about his CD, The Gospel According to Jazz, Part 4. Plus, see what Dwayne Johnson has coming into the big screen and small screen this summer. It is 27 before top of the hour. This is News 1 Now on TV1.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Coach Pierre Garçon played for the Washington Redskins. Catches passes from them. A longtime receiver for the Indianapolis Colts as well. But he is focused on life after football, and that is entrepreneurship. So he didn't say, let me go do a car wash, let me open up a club. He said, how about franchising pizza restaurants? He's here to talk about Spinfire Pizza. So, Pierre, welcome to News 1 Now. How the hell you ain't bringing pizza?
We're not open yet, but 11 o'clock we open up. We're definitely, you know, since...
No, you should have told them, look, I got to go do this TV show. I got to bring the product. I'm trying to sell the product. They got to taste the product.
You're 100% right, but if we're open, you know, we'd definitely have your whole staff.
Noni just want to know, you got some coupons or something?
I should have brought some, but...
Pierre, dog, I'm trying to help you here, man.
I really appreciate it. I really do appreciate it.
I'm trying to help you build your business, man.
You are.
Customers.
You're 100% right. I should have had some, but... You know, I actually have something in the car, to tell you the truth.
It's in the car.
Couldn't find parking out here.
You couldn't find it. Got a big old parking garage right here.
I didn't know about it.
Come on, bro. I'm trying to help a brother out. Oh, man. All right. So when did you decide that you wanted to do this? I mean, was it a matter of looking at your career and saying, look, I'm not going to play forever. I want to move into an entrepreneur phase?
It was, I actually did a marketing deal with the local pizza chain, Paisanos, and then I looked at, you know, diversifying myself and trying new things. So I was very interested in it. He was very successful in what he did, so he had the idea of quick, fast, casual pizza. And I was like, you know, this is something that's new and trendy that I would love to be a part of. I know I can help promote and advertise it.
So what is quick, fast, casual pizza?
Fast, casual pizza is fresh pizza. You walk in, we open up the dough in front of you, you pick your toppings, everything's made in front of you so you can see exactly what you're getting instead of being sprayed on and put into a machine that's, you know, cooks the pizza for you. We open the dough in front of you, you pick your toppings, pick your sauce, we put it in the oven. In 90 seconds, it comes out and it's ready to just be served and eaten.
Cool. Now, how many franchises are we talking about?
We have two right now. We're definitely looking to franchise more in the local DMV area. We're definitely looking to franchise on college campuses. I'm trying to get some of my teammates to franchise it out, and we're obviously going overseas to Dubai to open up in one of the world's largest malls.
So that could have been, I mean, look, first of all, for a lot of African Americans, mm-hmm. franchising has been critical. We've had folks who've owned McDonald's, we've mm-hmm. had folks who own Burger King's, and other type of restaurants, and it really is something that folks are looking at from an entrepreneur standpoint.
We definitely want to do that. We want to grow. We want to expand. We want franchisees to come, you know, expand, help us expand our brand. We definitely want to make them successful because that obviously at the end of the day makes us successful as the corporation.
Is it hard for you to watch players, current players and former players? When you see them struggle financially, making decisions in terms of what they're making, you know, significant amounts of money, but all of a sudden not understanding that, look, once that career is over, NFL has the shortest careers out of all major professional sports leagues, that you have to be thinking about life after the cheering stops.
Yeah, it's definitely tough, you know, for players, any players in NFL, NBA. It's definitely tough because we, one, don't make the amount of money people think we make. We have to pay taxes. And then, you know, it's definitely...
Well, I mean, you make more than the average person. What they don't understand is you're closer to the 50% tax bracket, plus you have agents, plus you have marketing mm-hmm. fees, plus you have not just federal taxes, but state taxes as well. And so, yeah, you can take $2 million, and it's not going to be $2 million. Uh-huh. So, yeah.
It's short-term, too, as well. You know, you make it all in 3 to 4 years, 5 years, but it's definitely hard to, you know, understand that this won't last forever because it's so good when it's coming in. You'd be like, oh, I'm making so much that I can live like this forever. But when things stop coming in, you know, it's a reality check. But going into business, it's also a risk too. So you it's not a bulletproof that going into franchise, going into, you know,
right,
anything is a bulletproof, but you definitely want to diversify. So if in case something does happen on one side, you have something to fall back on. But it is tough to see those guys, you know, struggle. But
I was interviewing Michael Irvin, and he said that he works harder after he's completed NFL Network telecast, and he did playing football. He said, hell, football was easy.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to franchising, when it comes to business, has it caused you to say, man, I thought I knew a lot. Now there's a whole lot more I have to learn, and is it sort of like being back as a rookie, trying to learn is a whole different skill set?
Oh, it's definitely a whole different skill set. It's from dealing with builders, dealing from engineers, dealing with, you know, property managers, dealing from a lot of different people that you have to deal with to open up your store. You have to get permits, you have to deal with customers, you have to deal with your employees. It is learning a lot, but it is easy once you do it over and over. It's just like football. We've been doing football since we were in elementary school. So, you know, now, you know, we just go out there, stretch, run. You know, it's second nature to us. But once I'm in the business for a long time, it becomes second nature. But it is relearning everything and taking everything in and continue to work at it as, you know, as an owner.
McDonald's requires their franchisees to actually work the stores. So have you worked the line?
Oh, I'm always in there. I was in there yesterday. We were
making pizza.
I'm in there making pizzas. You know, I actually, you know, put it on social media that, you know, I'm in there throwing dough, making pizzas for, you know, customers. They don't even know what's going on, but I'm in there, you know, helping out because I want to learn. I want to be on the frame. I can't, you know, try to tell one of the employees what to do if I don't know what I'm doing.
If you had to give advice to not just your fellow players, but let's say there's is a young brother in college or even in high school, what would you tell them they should be learning now? Not football related or sports related, for business.
For business, you know, get into something that you enjoy doing, that you want to learn more about, that's growing, that's, you know, that's what you want to do. I enjoy pleasing people. I enjoy serving people. I enjoy seeing something, a product, and, you know, actually seeing someone happy about it. You know, that's the best thing is when somebody say, oh, your pizza tastes good. Oh, your customers, your servers are great. You know, that's one of the great things that I'm happy to hear. But, you know, find something that you love. Find something that you want to do, that even if they didn't pay you, you know, I'm not getting paid from Spinfire right now, but, you know, hopefully when we start getting franchisees, you know, things would go better for us. But it's definitely find something that you can enjoy doing without getting paid and, you know, just do it, you know, without even having to worry about anything else.
All right, then. Well, Pierre, good luck with Spinfire. And next time, man, bring some pizza.
We'll do. I'll bring coupons right now, but pizzas will be late if you guys are open.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying. Like, folks sitting here, look at this crew. They eat pizza. It don't matter. It's 9:44 in the morning. That means nothing.
You come by our Arlington store, we'll definitely have it ready for you in 90 seconds.
Oh, there you go. All right, man, I appreciate it. Thanks a bunch. Good luck.
Thank you.
Folks, coming up, Texaphone is Kirk Whalum. We talk about why he dedicated a series of albums to God. Also, The Rock lays a smackdown in two major releases this summer, and man, they killed the box office this weekend. We will tell you how so. It is 16 before top of the hour. News 1 Now on TV 1.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
He's one of my favorite artists, no doubt the favorite saxophonist, Kirk Whalum. That's who I'm talking about. He recently came by the News One set. We discussed his new album, The Gospel According to the Jazz, Chapter 4. What's up, baby?
You are up, my friend. It's good to see you.
Likewise.
I didn't wear my ascot. I just wore a shirt that looks like an ascot.
Yeah, it looks like an ascot. I got you. Looking clean there. So, Chapter 4.
Yes, sir. So chapter one started with a big disappointment, man. I was dropped from Columbia Records, and my wife looked at me. She said, okay, it's like, what can you do today that you couldn't do yesterday when you were a Columbia recording artist? Mm-hmm. I said, all right, I know exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to do a project, a series called The Gospel According to Jazz, where we invite people who are not quote-unquote gospel artists, like myself, you know, jazz artists who love Jesus, and put together something that inspires people and draws them to someone higher than them. And it's turned, you know, George Duke was the first person I called, and I couldn't believe he said yes on chapter one, and then chapter two and chapter three, and he said yes on chapter four, and then he went to heaven. You know, and I wrote a song in chapter four called There.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he is, man.
Who are some of the other folks you have here? I see Rick Braun, Norman Brown.
Yes, sir.
Goodness. Sure. John Stoddard, I see he's here.
Shalaya, my brother Kevin, of course.
Your brother,
Star. He's always the star of the show, man. You know, and a great band, Gerald Veasley. It's always an all-star event, but we look at it like there's only one all-star. He is all the stars put into one, and his name is Jesus. And we are more or less, you know, trying to express the inexpressible, mm-hmm. you know, with a language that doesn't use words a lot of times. You know, it's a language that reaches into people's soul. And that's where jazz comes in. We're able to improvise to trust God for the next note. That's more or less what this is all about.
So when you think about this, and what people don't understand is, I mean, you also are involved in ministry, and so the reality is they all go together. And even on your jazz CDs, I mean, it is gospel fused, whether it's canon-esque, whether it's some of the other songs on other CDs.
Yeah, and I always say that, you know, gospel jazz, really one is content and the other is the delivery method. Mm-hmm. You know, a very creative way of delivering a content that is eternal, that is divine, that is transformative, you know. That's really what it's about. It's talking about someone. But how do you describe the indescribable, you know? I mean, there are books, you know, so many books written. I went to seminary and went through all those books, and still you can't get around who God is. You can't, is the guy's a he or she is. God is above all of that. But that's really where we're coming from, is we trying to connect with God and with people in such a way, using notes, using this language that wow, people feel just like, wow, what is going on here? And in essence, to me, words almost bring that down a notch. You know, when you go, the minute you mention a word, then, okay, now we're in the brain. So we, you know, we have to sort of process that word, but you don't process music the same way. It goes straight into your heart. It's like your ears are connected mm-hmm. to your heart, and your eyes, it's like with words, you have to kind of process them. What language do you speak? You know, on the CD, I speak some French and some Spanish, and then we speak the language of music. That's the language above all that connect. I believe that God even speaks music, that God speaks, and it's like, wow, I felt something, you know, as opposed to I processed it through the, like, what it was, a verb and a noun and all that.
Well, it's interesting. I interviewed Rance Allen, and one of the things that he said was that he said gospel music, he said secular music can make you dance and feel externally.
Mm-hmm.
He said, yeah, gospel music, you have the exact same feeling internally as you do externally.
Yeah. Well, I try not to be too dualistic about it. You know, again, for someone who is not, quote unquote, a gospel artist, you know, I really look at all music as having been created by God. That, you know, it's one thing. It's just that some of it is, you can tell, wow, this right here, I'm thinking is higher. There's something about this music. But I try not to think of it in terms of secular and sacred, and that's kind of where I'm coming from with this. It's a little controversial, really, but there are people who are Muslims, who are Jewish, who are atheists, who can feel this
mm-hmm.
and say, wow, okay, now I'm not really with, you know, the Jesus, but whatever this is, I'm with that.
And you're saying, no, this is Jesus-driven, so yeah, right. You might be down with it, but I'm going to let you know where it's
exactly.
coming from.
And you know, or not. In other words, I'm able to put it out there, and if they ask me, I can say, well, yeah, I love Jesus, and I don't know what your faith tradition is, but close your eyes and listen to this, you know. And then I get to speak, you know, with my language.
Well, speaking of that, let's see, you got a little language to speak with. You got,
well,
got,
I,
less, got
I
a little
I do
something
have
for us.
Yeah, my appendage here.
Okay, all right.
My wife,
yes.
My girlfriend.
All right, go right ahead.
I didn't know what notes I was going to play, but those are the notes that came.
That'll work.
So in other words, God is able to, we're trusting God for the next note, that mm-hmm. God puts some melody in your heart and you're able to sort of connect and just trust him and go with it.
Folks, the CD is called The Gospel According to the Jazz Chapter 4. CD and DVD?
And DVD. It's called kind of a docu-musical, docu-concert, you know?
Y'all can go to kirkwilliam.com to get that, so you certainly want to get it. And again, I have all of his CDs, all of them.
Wow.
From day one, floppy disk, and you know that, The Promise, all of them. So my man Kirk Whalum, always good to see you, baby.
Always, brother.
All right, take care. Folks, this is News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Folks, Dwayne The Rock Johnson stars in action-packed summer blockbuster San Andreas. Hip Hollywood reporter Jasmine Simpkins caught up with The Rock when he cemented his handprints at the TCL Chinese Theater.
Everybody down!
Just days before his film San Andreas shakes up the box office, Dwayne The Rock Johnson is accomplishing another huge feat, having his hand and footprints immortalized at the famed TCL Chinese Theater in Hollywood.
It's awesome. It's an epic day, and I'm so grateful, and I have my family here, and everybody was here. I mean, very, very cool. Very thankful.
And this is just the beginning of an epic summer for the wrestler turned actor. Hot on the heels of the release of San Andreas, where he stars as a search and rescue pilot looking for his daughter after a massive earthquake rocks the coast of California, Johnson will be taking over the small screen in his first scripted series, Ballers, set to bow on HBO June 21st.
Right now, my dreams are all about deals and dollars. I'm your financial manager, and I will put your money to work. Here's the thing, is you have all these big movies, and they're cool, right? And I'm grateful. And then you have a TV show, and I'm grateful. I love it. When something like this happens, it's the great reminder that this is like the coolest thing ever, and I'm so grateful.
Well, that's it from here in Hollywood at the TCL Chinese Theater. For HipHollywood.com and TV One, I'm Jasmine Simpkins.
And speaking of San Andreas, it took the top box office spot its opening weekend, taking in more than $53 million in the U.S. This marks the largest opening for The Rock outside the Fast and Furious franchise, but the first time a movie that he has basically anchored has done so well. Pitch Perfect 2, we had, of course, a couple of folks on the show, including Esther Dean, held the number two spot at the domestic box office, adding $14.8 million in its third weekend. And Disney's Tomorrowland saw ticket sales drop 58% from the previous weekend, but still finished third. The futuristic film added $13.8 million to its total revenues. Folks, it's birthday shout-out time. Yesterday, rapper Waka Flocka, Waka Flocka, turned 29 years old. The Washington Redskins wide receiver Santana Moss turned 36. Hanging with Mr. Cooper star Mark Curry turns 54. Oscar award-winning actor Morgan Freeman turns 78. On this day in history in 1973, Detroit's WGPR becomes the nation's first television station owned by an African-American when William V. Banks was given a permit to operate it by the FCC. In 1966, approximately 2,400 people attended President Lyndon Johnson's White House Conference on Civil Rights. All right, folks, tomorrow on News One Now, my homeboy actor Dondre Whitfield, the husband of Sally Richardson, I'm just saying to mess with him, talks about mentoring young black men. Also, the premiere of Unsung kicks off on Wednesday, and it will kick off with Ike Turner, so you don't want to miss that right here on TV One. Look, you can follow me on Twitter at Roland S. Martin. Also, go to News One at News One. If you go to Facebook, go to the News One Facebook page. You can also go to my Facebook like page as well. Love to hear from you. And, of course, for more stories and updates, go to NewsOne.com. Folks, you have a fantabulous day. I'm going to see you tomorrow. Holla!
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin.